The Grinch played a nasty trick on the Whos. Well, of course he did. He's the Grinch. Did we expect anything different? Of course not. And he was absolutely thrilled with himself for playing this nasty trick. I love the way the book articulates that moment when this idea pops in his head. The moment of revelation when the light goes on and he comes up with this idea. The book says then he got an idea. An awful idea. The Grinch got a wonderful, awful idea. Sometimes ideas are both wonderful and awful in the same moment. Great and terrible in the same moment. And those are the kind of thoughts we don't want to have. Well, maybe we all have them. Maybe they all pop in our heads from time to time, but we certainly don't act upon them. Our hearts are too big. Our God is too big. The Grinch, however, was ready to act on this wonderful, awful idea, and that's one of the things that separates the Grinch from you. Now, while I love the way the story articulates the transformation, I love the way the 1966 cartoon movie animates the transformation. It's wonderful. If a cartoon could capture a moment of evil transformation, this 1966 cartoon does it. It nails it. Picture, if you will, a Grinch with a rather dumb-looking look on his face. No emotion in his heart, complete indifference, complete void. And maybe that's telling in and of itself. I mean, what does evil look like when evil's not doing evil? It's just complete void, nothingness, no person there, just a shell of a person. So he begins with this look of complete void and nothingness, and then the moment this idea pops in his head, you see the transformation underway. Indifference turns into mischief. Mischief turns into wrongdoing. Wrongdoing turns into harmfulness. Harmfulness turns into evil, and that evil was diabolical. And the Grinch was thrilled with himself. What I call diabolical on the Grinch's grinny face, it came across as sheer joy. And again, that in and of itself is telling. Who finds joy in that? Who finds pleasure in doing evil? Who finds pleasure in doing harm? Who finds pleasure in doing the wrong thing? Who finds pleasure in harming or even potentially harming another person? There's something not right there. That's a bad brain at work or a bad heart at work or both. The harmlessness of the grumpiness and the grinchiness of the Grinch became the harmfulness of somebody who was willing to act on these evil thoughts. Transformation in a split second, just like that. Now, in our modern world, it's probably hard to think that what the Grinch did was evil, because we live in a world where evil is all around us, and that's really, really evil. And by those standards, what the Grinch did is kind of rather tame. But keep in mind a couple things. One, this is a children's story, so it's going to be tamped down a little bit, right? But secondly, keep in mind that all the elements are there for any kind of evil in the world, because this Grinch feels nothing. No compassion, no sensitivity, no empathy, feels nothing toward his fellow Whos except for anger and hatred and resentment. And that is all evil needs to flourish. So the plan in and of itself was clever. You know, if you can even assign wonderful and clever or anything like that to an evil idea, it was a good idea. What made it so good? I mean, the charade, the parody. He came up with this great idea that he was going to parody as Santa Claus, and he had everything. He had the hat, he had the suit, he had the boots, he had the reindeer, poor Max, and the sleigh, a bag full of toys. He mimicked everything down through the chimney, wandering around the house at night. He had it all down, and he executed this evil plan under the guise of something good. I've always felt really badly for Max, by the way. I mean, Max was just an innocent bystander. He didn't want to participate in this evil scheme. He's a dog. Dogs, by definition, can't be evil. There's no such thing as a bad dog, is there? Dogs are only good. I am convinced that God gave us dogs to teach us a little bit more about who God is, to reveal the nature of God. So why are we even getting Max involved in this whole thing? Max is innocent. Let him go. Leave him alone. All right, I've digressed enough on that. What made this scheme so crafty that the Grinch pretended to be something good? He pretended to be Santa. He pretended to be someone he wasn't. And he pretended to be someone that the people trusted. Ah, there it is. The abuse of trust. The misuse of trust. That's how he was able to fool Cindy Lou Who, who was no more than two. She trusted Santa. Well, of course, who wouldn't? It's Santa. We're going to trust him. That's what makes the Grinch's plan so evil. He shattered and misused this trust. Dante, by the way, in his Inferno, describes the abuse of trust as the lowest form of evil in the lowest form of hell. Nothing there but frozen human souls. It's fiction, of course, but it is commentary on human evil and evil in the world. What is the worst kind of evil? Those who betray others. And even more specifically, those who betray the ones who have a certain reason to trust in people in authority. You know, like a congregation trusts its pastor, or a classroom trusts its teacher, or a patient trusts his or her doctor, or a community trusts those who are there to protect them. In all of these positions and authority and more, we place our trust. And to violate that is the lowest form of evil, says Dante in his Inferno. In the Christmas story in Matthew's Gospel, which is quite different from the Christmas story in Luke's Gospel, by the way, King Herod is the person in the position of power and trust who misuses his position of power. In the same way that the Grinch tricked the Whos, King Herod tricked the wise men. He presented himself as a good king. We know he wasn't. We know he wasn't. King Herod was as evil as evil comes. But he said all the right things. He pretended to be good. He came across as good. Go and search carefully for the child. And when you do, bring me good word so that I may go and pay homage to him. Oh, isn't that sweet? King Herod, what a nice guy. I guess he was just going to bake some Christmas cookies and take them to the Christ child. We know Herod was evil because we know the Bible. We know the story. But the wise men didn't know. Fortunately, they were warned by God in a dream that Herod couldn't be trusted, and they were warned to leave and go by a different road. Don't you ever go by Herod's palace ever again. Get out of town, and we won't speak of these things again. The wise men tricked the trickster, which is often the way God works in the Bible, and I love that. I love when evil gets thwarted. It's always a happy story when evil gets thwarted. You know, the sun of King Herod, King Herod Jr., that wasn't his name, that's just what I'm calling him. He also pulled off a little charade of his own, along with Caiaphas, the great high priest. They had charges brought against Jesus, which were phony. And they set up this mock trial under the guise of goodness, under the guise of righteousness and justice, but it wasn't. It was all fake. They knew the outcome even before they started off. There was no justice here. It was the opposite of justice. The shepherds of Israel, the kings, the temple authorities, the priests, the scribes, they were there to protect and care for the people. But instead, more often than not, they didn't. And the good shepherd, our Jesus, got tricked by the bad shepherds of the world. With a world that's constantly tricking us, it's difficult to know what's good and what's evil and who's tricking us out there. I send warnings all the time about fake emails that go out in my name or go out in one of the other pastors' name or present themselves as one of the staff or even some that present themselves to be one of you, pretending to be you, preying on others among you, preying on that trust that we have in one another and in our pastors and in our church structure and our leaders. That's a terrible, terrible thing. How do we know what to believe? How do we know what's true? How do we know what's not true? How do we know what's real? How do we know what's fake? How do we know what's not? Sometimes Christmas looks like Christmas, but isn't. Sometimes Christmas doesn't look like Christmas, but is. A few years ago, there was a church that printed up shopping bags that said right on the shopping bag, "Jesus is the reason for the season." And everybody was walking around with the mall with their shopping bag. Jesus is the reason for the season. Well, why is that silly? Forgive me for being the Grinch, but you can dress up shopping and present it as Jesus, but it's still shopping, right? Sometimes Christmas looks like Christmas, but it's not Christmas. Sometimes Christmas doesn't look like Christmas, but it is. There's the story of a mall and the night visitors. The story of a shepherd boy who doesn't walk very well, and he uses a crutch. And he lives with his mother in abject poverty. And one night, three visitors came to seek lodging on their way to pay homage to a special child who had just been born. Well, if you haven't guessed already from that, those three special visitors are the three kings, the three wise men. Amal and his mother feed and entertain their guests with what little they have. And then the three kings settle in for the night. But while they slept, Amal's mother tried to steal the gold from one of the kings. She got caught. Amal tried to come to the defense of his mother. The king listened to their plea, considered their situation, considered their abject poverty, considered the love that Amal had for his mother and the honesty of this child, and then, in an act of grace, decides to give them the gold, saying that the child that they seek will not need it. His kingdom is not of money or gold. His kingdom is far more valuable than that. Overwhelmed with guilt and shame, Amal's mother wanted to make things right by offering a gift, but she had nothing to give. Amal, seeing that his mother was struggling, offers his crutch, the only thing that he has, the only tool that he has to walk around and get by day to day. After handing his crutch, Amal discovers that he can walk again. He didn't need it. A miracle has happened. In God's kingdom, Jesus doesn't need gold, and children who can't walk don't need crutches. The opera closes with the kings asking if they can take Amal to visit the Christ child so that he can lay his crutch before the manger. Amal and the night visitors doesn't look very Christmassy, but it is as Christmassy comes. Matthew's gospel doesn't feel very Christmassy, which is one of the reasons why we don't read it on Christmas Eve. We normally read from Luke's gospel. But Matthew's gospel is just as much a part of the story as Luke's, and together with all of the gospels, they give us an idea of the birth and the entrance of the Christ child into the world. And Matthew's gospel fulfills Isaiah's prophecy that this Messiah, this Christ, shall be not just for Israel, but for all the world. And that's good news for us, because it means for us that not only do we get to dress up our homes and our lives and our offices and whatever, our schools and so forth, with Christmassy things, we get to live it and believe it and know for sure in our hearts the meaning of Christmas, a force which strengthens us from within to protect ourselves against all of the evil of the world, and a force which strengthens us outwardly so that we may become like good shepherds in the world, little Jesuses, to watch out for one another, to care for one another, to protect one another, and to stand up for one another when any of us fall into harm's way. Thanks be to God for giving us this power. Thanks be to God for giving us this gift. So be it. Amen. And now, just for fun, our band Faith Under Fire is going to play our own version of The Grinch.